"It's all right," the youngest brother said. He hated it when his voice sounded like some sitcom teenager in his head. He wanted his big brother to take him seriously. "Nobody cares about all this ancient family bullshit. Just enjoy your day." He leapt from the bed and towered over his brother, grabbed the coat. It was astonishingly heavy. "You wanted this goddamn dramatic event, so get out there and live it up." "Really, baby brother?" Little Angel meanly noted his brother's accent, made the word into "really." "You're having a great time. Just be honest. Enjoy it. You set this all in motion for yourself, yeah? Who cares how I feel about things?" Little Angel wanted to embrace the coat and toss it to the floor in equal measure. He laid it back at his brother's feet yet again. Big Angel was so furious, he was almost healed. "You don't like my party?" "Sure, it's great." "Prick. Back at ya." "You were always a crybaby," Big Angel snapped. "I know, like when you taught me how to swim at the beach." Big Angel reddened. "You had everything," he said. "Are we really doing this?" It was Little Angel's turn to laugh. "Everything?" he said. "You think it was all happiness on my side of the street?" "Now we get to it," Big Angel said. "You dare!" He just pointed at his little brother. "I didn't have food, cabrón." Minnie rushed in. "Tia Marilu!" "What?" both brothers said. "It's a disaster," she cried. "Por qué?" said Big Angel. "Tia Paz tore her wig off. The whole party's turned to shit." "Marilu wears a wig?" Little Angel said. In spite of everything, both brothers laughed. "Ain't funny. I had to pull them apart. Paz kicked over a table. Marilu ran off with a napkin over her head." She hurried back out. The brothers wiped their eyes. "I know you were happy not to be here," Big Angel said. "You didn't have to deal with all the struggles we had, all this excitement. It never ended." "You don't speak for me." "I speak for all of you. I am the patriarch." He had meant for it to be funnier than it was. Little Angel cleared his throat and looked away. "I always had one question for you, carnal," Big Angel pounced. "What did you ever have to cry about?" "Well, Miguel, he left us too." Big Angel took a noisy gulp of the tamarind La Gloriosa had brought. "He left us first. For you," he said. "For me? I wasn't even born yet, for God's sake. I thought you were a computer guy. Figure it out." "Father said your mother was an alcoholic, that she picked lice out of her hair and snapped them with her nails." Little Angel guffawed. "That's what he told us about your mother." Big Angel was trembling. "Take it back," he said. "I didn't start this." "Father was forced to marry your mother because he was a gentleman," he snapped. "She was knocked up." Stunned silence. They couldn't even hear the party. They couldn't hear the kids in the room next door or their video games. "My what?" Little Angel said. Big Angel looked away. "Now look what you made me do," he said. "What did you say just now?" "Forget it." Little Angel stood. He sat back down closer to Big Angel. "Holy God," he said. "Your mother was pregnant with you. That's why they got married." "Liar." "Oh, it's true. And you call me a liar again, I'll get up." "And what?" "I can still fight." "Oh, I'm shaking." Big Angel rocked forward and grabbed a fistful of Little Angel's shirt. "Hey!" Big Angel bared his teeth. "I can still show you." "I don't want to hurt you." Little Angel put his palm against his brother's chicken bone chest. "Come on now." "Teach you." "Don't want to hurt you." They wrestled on the bed. Big Angel landed several loud smacking blows on his baby brother's face. "Stop it, you dick," Little Angel said. Perla rushed in and spanked Little Angel with her slipper. "Están locos?" she shouted. "Flaca," said Big Angel, occupied with ripping Little Angel's pocket off the front of his shirt. "Please leave us alone right now." "I am so sick of all of you," she said, and stomped back down the hall. They collapsed on the bed, panting. I kicked your ass, Big Angel said. He sat upright and gulped from his glass of juice, then passed it across the bed to his brother. Little Angel didn't want Big Angel's tepid tamarind juice, but he recognized a gesture of reconciliation when he saw one. He took the glass and drank some down. I went away, Little Angel said, to make something of myself. I thought I was going to change the world. And what happened, Karna? Nothing. Oh, come on. Little Angel took a deep breath. I know you hated me for leaving. I know you thought I looked down on all of you. Well, maybe I did. All my life, I thought I had to escape to survive. Maybe even to escape you. And now you are leaving me, and I can't imagine the world without you. I always thought I didn't really have the father I wanted, and all this time it was you. To be here now, to see what you have made, humbles me. The good parts and the bad, it doesn't matter. I thought I was going to save the world, and here you were, all along, changing the world, day by day, minute by minute. Big Angel was going to say something, but decided against it. Changing the world, poco a poco, a little better, right here, right now. 7:30 p.m. The satanic Hispanic lay in his unkempt bed, hoping Moms wouldn't come home. Lily lay against him, her head on his chest. They were naked. She totally snored. He ran his hand up and down her narrow back. Her bottom was like two soft fruits or something, like handfuls. Her shades were on the table with his Deadpool action figures. His hands smelled like her. He had never smelled that before. He held his hand over his face. He couldn't tell anybody in his family about it. It smelled really good. He didn't think he was ever going to wash his hands because he could smell her later. He could be right here again. Oh, he said. Maybe he'd tell Little Angel about it. Little Angel wouldn't think he was a perv. He probably knew some poem about it. But Pato? His own dad? Nah, Pops would try to sniff his fingers. After they had made love, she had incredibly mounted him and allowed him to see her slender body as she moved. She had nestled against his chest and scratched at his body hair. I'm glad you aren't a waxer, she said. He actually snorted, but felt like that was too unsophisticated. I'm a dreamer, she said. Yeah, no kidding. He made a small laughing chuff. People in the sky. No, not that. A dreamer, like the Dream Act. What's that? DACA? You never heard of it? For undocumented students? He hove up on one elbow. Dude, you're illegal? Her eyes were closed. Marco, she said, finally using the right name. You almost were not a moron for a moment. She found his chin and kissed it and rolled over to sleep. Lupita muscled Tio Jimbo onto the couch and tucked a nice blanket around him. She paused in the bathroom and touched up her makeup, rinsed out her mouth, stole a cigarette pack from Jimbo's stash. She stared down at him. He almost looked at peace. She hurried out to the car. She wasn't about to miss the birthday cake. Ookie was feeling good. He wandered down the street. He hadn't seen his mom for a couple of days, but his pockets were full of cookies. His ghost show was on TV pretty soon. Ghost bros creeping around freaky places going, "Is that you?" He was tired, though. He was going to eat whatever was in the fridge. If he could stay awake, he was going to go into Mirna Bustamante's backyard later and steal the Legos in the sandbox. But he also had to watch out for his toy cars. They were going to be delivered. Good old Little Angel. Goody good. Cars and buses and pigeons. Wild thing, he said. You make my heart sing. Giovanni had all that dude's drug money wadded up in his pocket. He tried to fist bump Lalo, but his father was limp in a lawn chair staring at his splayed feet. "Later, Pops," he said. "You might want to get out of town for a minute." Lalo raised one finger. "Whatever," Gio said. Minnie and La Gloriosa cleaned the tables. They had never seen so many paper plates. Where had they come from? Red plastic cups. "Just keep working," La Glory said. "Don't let your mama do anything." Perla had joined the card game. "Daddy and Tio are fighting," Minnie said. "Men are idiots." None of the comadres argued with her. Back in the bedroom. "I'm done," Little Angel said. He got up to go. "Sit."
"No, carnal."
"Sit down for a minute, please." Rage and sorrow, rage and sorrow. "I am trying to walk out of your house." "Walk through the house, away from this barrio, away from this family, for good this time. No big brother, no beautiful niece, no relatives, no gloriosa, no damned father, no history. Just that big, ridiculous cop car outside. Just that. Just drive." He would drive to Seattle. He would drive north until he could turn right and vanish into the Western American mountains. He would bury himself in snow. He would keep going north. He would drive to the end of the highway to settle in Homer, Alaska, to watch eagles work the shore, to write poems. He could meet a poet there, a woman with great hair and good coffee. He would get so far it would take a week for a postcard to get out, but he couldn't even step away from the foot of Big Angel's bed. "If I go," he finally said, "I will never come back." "Sit down, carnal," Big Angel said. Slowly he sat. "You already left us forever," his brother said. "I had to die to bring you home." Big Angel started taking his pills. Noisy little gulps of tamarind juice. "I destroyed my own family," the patriarch said. Little Angel tried to tune it out. He didn't want to listen, but he did. What more was there? What more could anyone take with them at the end of the day? Big Angel started into it all. Braulio, Chente Bend, that part of the narrative carefully redacted. Struggles with his mother. At last, from parts unknown, El Indio entered the family ring. "I never understood Indio, carnal. I was bad to him. I was trying to be a father for the first time, but who did I have to copy? Our father. I was trying to be him, and God damn it, I'm not him. Sorry, God. All that trouble between us, why did I never learn to say I was sorry? What is wrong with me?" "Do not answer that, cabrón. We were strong males, Indio and me. We fought for Perla's love. I see that. He must have thought I was an invader, taking over his perfect world. I thought he was a spoiled little bastard. Mama's boy. And, you know, he was strange. I know you gave him those records, that crazy music. You, cabrón, it was you. No, it's okay, carnal. I understand everything. Indio wanted to be famous. He wanted to be a star. I told him he was crazy. Acting? Singing? What? Long hair? What kind of man did that? Men earned money and made a home with a good woman and had babies. Men were serious, that's what I thought. I told him to be an accountant. Don't laugh. An accountant. Or maybe manage a 7-Eleven. He said, what about Grandpa? Playing piano all night. Yes, I said, but that's like a hobby. After his real work is done. India was furious. My life is not a hobby, he said. And he kicked over his chair when he left the room. So dramatic. And then he moved away for good. I don't even know where he lived. He had those tattoos. And he dressed all in white. The hair. My father didn't like that. Our father. They didn't get along. Well, a year later, Indio got a job singing in a nightclub in Hillcrest, not far from Dad's place, the Rip Room, where he played piano, a place called Lips. He gave us an invitation. What did we know? I made Perla go. It was Perla and Dad and me. We got all dressed up. It was our boy's first big performance. No, listen. Yes, sure, strange people there, but I thought, you know, they're like you. Crazy hippie people, gringos. Lipstick on boys, I don't know. Leather. Stop laughing. We had drinks. Perla was scared of all the crazy people. I think this was why our father had a stroke. It's not funny. Yes, Indio came out on stage. His new name was Blackie Angel. Another pinche angel. He came out from behind the silver curtain as Cher. He was in some kind of bikini bottom, and he had chichis. This is not funny. He had makeup and feathers in his hair, and he was singing Cher songs. He came up to our father and humped him. Cabrón, Papa just sat there sipping his drink like nothing happened. Indio rubbing his crotch on father's shoulder. Then Indio turned around and shook his nalgas at us. It was worse than Mama and the parrot. And then he grabbed his chichis. I knew what he was doing. He squeezed them and pointed them at us. He was shooting milk all over us in his mind. Carnal! He was washing us out the door. Poor Perla kept staring at his panties. She grabbed her heart and shouted, "Where is his pee-pee? He lost his pee-pee." Indio leaned over and whispered in his mother's ear, "I tucked it in, Ma." "Stop it. Stop it. You're making me laugh." The next day, Big Angel had found his father dead on the bathroom floor. Heart attack. You knew that, but now you know why. Big Angel was so somber, Little Angel couldn't help himself. "Didn't Dad like Cher?" he said. They bent over laughing, though Big Angel cursed him and said, "Not funny." "Kind of funny." Big Angel hit him with a pillow. Winded, he took another sip of his tamarind, then put his glass down. He was smiling insanely, leering, his feverish eyes like dartboard targets, filled with fury. "Carnal," said Little Angel, wiping his eyes, "that is the best story I ever heard." "I tried to be good to my boy." All Little Angel could do was nod. He didn't want to start laughing again. "Tell me," Big Angel said, "did I do anything good in your life?" "You gave me the books." It was instantaneous. "Yes, all the books. That was pretty good. I gave you good ones." "And bad ones." "True, but all books are good, man. Imagine no books." "I still have them." "Ah, bueno. But what is the best thing I ever did, aside from giving you books?" Little Angel rubbed his eyes with his palms and ran his hands over his forehead to smooth his hair back. "Well," he said, "you called me one morning and told me to get ready because you were coming for me and to tell my mom I'd be gone all day. It was mysterious. It's not like you came for me all the time. You wouldn't tell me why, but you told me to bring a coat. So you showed up in a while. You had Lamini with you. She was just a little kid. And we drove off. You had ham and cheese sandwiches." "On bolillos," Big Angel said. "Right. Ham and cheese on bolillos with chilies and mayo and Mexican Pepsis." "Mexican's better." "And we drove east to the mountains. It had snowed up there. Living in San Diego, we never saw snow, so you said, 'We're going to make a snowball.' And we did." "That's what we did, yep. There was about an inch of snow. We got out of the car, scraped up some, and threw it at Minnie. She started crying. Then we got back in the car and drove home." They laughed some more. "Yes," Big Angel said, "good. Now tell me the worst thing I ever did." "Come on. Tell me, brother. Was it the beach?" "No." "What?" "It was the year Dad died. We had nothing." "I know, I know. It didn't match your suffering. Blah, blah, blah. And we had nothing. No car, no money, no food." Kind of a theme, isn't it? "And it was Christmas. And Mom didn't know how we'd afford presents or a Christmas dinner. And you called That was your thing, I guess. Surprise phone calls. Big Angel sighed. I know. You said, don't worry about a thing. I am your big brother. Yes, I know. I am the patriarch. Yes. You said, we will come for you Christmas morning. You fucking said you'd treat us to a huge Mexican Christmas fiesta. Family. Yes. Don't buy a ham, you said. Don't worry. Perla is making the best feast you ever ate. And Mom cried. She was so relieved. I'm sorry. No, wait. You wanted it, so here it comes. You never showed up. We got up and played Christmas music all morning and drank coffee and promised each other we'd give presents next year, yeah? And you never came. I am so sorry. We had some bread in the house, so we ate some toast. Marmalade. Mom always had marmalade. She thought she was French. I hate marmalade. It wasn't much, but we were saving room, we told each other, for Pedla's great meal. And when 5 o'clock came around, I finally called. I was like, when are you coming? Do you know what you said? Yes, I said I was too busy to come get you. You said that it was too much trouble to come get us. Big Angel sat staring at the wall. What did you do? I dug in the couch. I shook out my bank. I raided Mom's purse. Then I walked a mile to 7-Eleven and bought a little canned ham and a can of corn. Jesus, how Dickensian. Thank you, Big Angel said, for telling me. Ancient history. I don't think so. It's all right. You're a good man. I am a bad man. Little Angel turned to him. I forgive you. Big Angel sobbed once. Hey, look at how many people love you. Look at everybody you have helped. Men who do good deeds only wish to atone for their sins. Minnie came in, followed by Perla. Why are you crying, Daddy? He picked at his blanket and avoided their eyes. Mi amor, Perla said, are you done fighting? Who won? Minnie asked. Both men raised their hands. Ya es hora, Perla said. Let's get cake. Time for the cake, Daddy. He put up a trembling hand. Just a minute. Flaco, Perla said. Flaca! Un minuto, sí. The women reluctantly exited the room. Big Angel struggled upright from his pillows. I did worse, he said. I have so much filth in my past. Stop. I snuck into your house with Marilu. You were in kindergarten. Papa and your mother were working. We broke all her jewelry with a hammer. What? And then we cut up your mother's nice clothes with scissors. Little Angel's mouth hung open. We left it all for her to find. Ew. Yes, and Papa had silver dimes and quarters and cigar tubes. I took them. Tell me how good a man I am now. Parrot. The brothers lay side by side, shuffling through so many memories, so many imperfect scenes. It felt as though they had opened a box of old photographs, each of the pictures torn and tattered, but for all their lives, they had hoarded one perfect memory. One joyous, inappropriate memory that they kept as their own secret, like a holy relic. Now seemed the moment they needed it most. Remember the parrot? It was decades ago. Big Angel had been in possession of his green card for only 6 months, and he was already exhausted. Being American was like getting a good shellacking, whatever that meant. He'd heard it, and it sounded right for how he was feeling. These people did things all day long. They were frantic. They ate lunch in their cars and never had a siesta. They even went to church in their cars or on their TVs, and they were making him embarrassed about being Mexican. It was creeping into his mind. He didn't know what to do with himself. He was self-conscious about everything. His pants were cheap and outmoded. His posture was somehow slack and not heroic like the mad posture of the marching gringos. He hung his head too much. He wore white socks. He was turning gray inside like boiled meat, he thought. He could not find energy in himself and had taken to drinking black coffee all day until his stomach felt sour and his abdomen sloshed nauseatingly as he walked. But he never walked. He sped among herds of cars up and down the endless ribbons of California highways, cursing and chain-smoking. For that was his other vice, pell-mells, like his father, but consumed at an industrial pace. Smoked quickly, and the next butt lit from the glowing cherry at the end of his previous butt. He even tried to hold his smokes like Americans did. He held them between his thumb and middle finger. He'd seen Steve McQueen do it in a movie, and he used that infamous F.U. finger to flick the spent cigarette away like a shot rocket. And he was ashamed of his father. What a beaner, making believe he was some piano master on Ed Sullivan, moved away to white suburbs up north of the border, living with neighbors named Wally and Ralph and Ginny and Floyd. White faces turning red every time he drove up there. He was pretty sure of that. His father had married a woman from Indiana named Betty, for God's sake, and that little brother riding his Stingray bike around in dirt lots and jumping it off cardboard ramps like some pudgy daredevil stole his name. And now this ghastly development. Once a month, mother deigned to cross the border for her regular inspection of her children's lives. Angel had to drive down there in his Rambler and collect her. He was the eldest. It was his job. But he and his mother, it was complicated. He hated these visits. And he had lost his taste for Tijuana. It was all embarrassing. Mama America. Who would name somebody America but Mexicans? And his damned father had gotten it into his head that little Angel was too much of an Americano. He was so gringified that he needed regular doses of Mexico to save his soul. So somehow, Big Angel had to first drive all the way north to Claremont to pick up the kid. Double hell. An hour on I-5 going nowhere. The kid somehow thought his big brother would love stopping at Winchell's Donuts every time to buy him chocolate donuts. Not really, he wanted to say. But he remembered those many Saturdays watching the kid's lonesome fantasy life with his stupid television shows and his comic books. Father would drive down in a day or two to collect little Angel. He didn't fool Big Angel one bit. Big Angel knew his father too well. He was coming down every month to sniff around at Mother. He could not believe that he was denied. He could not abide the thought that he could not creep into her bloomers once again at will and enjoy what he had once enjoyed whenever he wanted. And to her credit, Mother stayed in her back bedroom or went to Cesar's house instead of dealing with him. Big Angel lit his fresh cigarette with the end of the previous one and shot that butt out into the air as if trying to light a brush fire along the road. He steered with his knees as he engaged in this complex operation. Tijuana, then, was not anything like the modern technological mecca it has become. No fancy discos or IMAX cinemas, no river channel. No art scene or microbreweries or cafes serving French roasts. There were donkeys spray-painted with zebra stripes that made Little Angel ridiculously happy, though. They still lurked on certain corners, wearing sombreros and withstanding tourists taking selfies. Years later, it seemed the only constants in Tijuana were the Border Patrol and the burros. They entered and immediately descended into the murky funk of the Tijuana River, a broad, muck-choked alley beneath rattling wooden bridges. On either side of the road, the notorious slum called Cartolandia, now eradicated, then an expanse of hovels made of scrap and tarps and cartons. Big Angel paid no attention to any of it. He was trying to formulate his plan of attack. How would he take charge in the USA? He had a family to run. They pulled up before Mother's yellow house, perched on the edge of a dirt hill, overlooking some dusty park, and in the distance, Cine Reforma, where sometimes Little Angel conned his brother into suffering through Mexican Vampire and Mil Máscaras versus various monster movies. The top of Mother's wall was glittering with embedded shards of shattered Pepsi bottles to shred the arms of imagined gangsters hoping to creep in and steal her underwear. She was in her room, packing and repacking her overnight bag. Vicks VapoRub was the main commodity she smuggled across the border. And in the living room, the green parrot raised psychotic maelstroms of noise in its domed cage. Everybody in La Paz owned a green parrot. They all had names. They had named this bird after themselves, Periquito de la Cruz. Big Angel thought, he's hardly a little parrot. That bird was fat. It would announce its presence all day with the monomania of unbridled ego.
Periquito, 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 Cruz!
This last delivered in a screech that rang in Big Angel's ears. Shut up, Big Angel said. He would have lit up another smoke right then, but his mother forbade cigarettes in the house. And then, Little Angel, fifth graders, being almost as smart as parrots. He joined in, shouting at the parrot,
Cruz! 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 Cruz!
Fortunately, Mama America came forth and observed the scene. Ah, the bird, she said. Mother, said Big Angel, let's go. He was eager to escape before the two idiots started their duet again. Son, she said, have you noticed there are no parrots on the other side? El otro lado, the other side. He said he hadn't noticed. All these Mexicans, and no green parrots. Gringos like canaries. I have a parakeet, Little Angel offered, to be helpful. He's called Pepe. I've been thinking, she said. I think I will start a business. Oh, no, Big Angel thought. These old women with their negocios. These women would find things to sell, or they would sew something, or they would cook tamales. Big Angel's favorite definition of Mexican was, out of nothing, food. I will import parrots to the Mexicans in exile. Pay a few pesos here, sell them for 100 times what I paid. Big Angel grabbed her bag. Sorry, madre, but no. This is illegal. You are not allowed to carry parrots into the United States. Both brothers should have taken note. We shall see, is all she said. Long before they got to the border crossing, Mother spoke again. Take me to the fruit market. You can't take fruit either, Mother.
Who said anything about fruit?
Big Angel cast a fretful glance back at Little Angel, then took the detour east. The fruit market was in a warren of old buildings surrounding a parking lot. The ground floors of these edifices housed soup counters and tortilla shops, candy cellars and taco stands, and of course, fruit. Fruit of all kinds. Watermelons and lemons, papayas and mangoes, bananas, stalks of sugar cane, and vegetables, eggplants like dinosaur eggs, jicama, chiles. The parking area was clogged with trucks at all hours and hustling men with rags tied on their heads, moving produce. The blacktop was sticky with a centimeter-thick coat of ancient fruit, mashed and sun-baked and remashed over the years. And in the far corner, to Big Angel's horror, a bird vendor. Madre, no, he said. She marched away. Are we in trouble, Angel? The kid asked. I think maybe so, Big Angel replied in English.
A green parrot, young man,
she said to the bird seller as she fished a few colorful pesos out of her pocketbook. If you would be so kind.
Un periquito bien mansito.
What does she say? Little Angel said to his brother. tame, Big Angel said. Mother wants a tame parrot. He lit a Pall Mall and started to slouch as if the sun were melting him. The helpful fellow produced a blinking little green parrot that sat astride his finger mildly and turned its head in every direction, observing the activity all around them. He climbed upon America's extended finger and fluffed his feathers. Big Angel puffed his cigarette and observed. Mother handed the man his money and began to compliment the bird in the faux sweet baby talk all Mexican women used to delight babies and small dogs.
Ay, qué guapo el periquito. Ay, mira nomás qué bonito.
The little bird grew proud and stuck out his chest and preened vainly. As she spoke, Mother reached into her purse and produced a small bottle with an eyedropper on top. The brothers nudged each other. She unscrewed the cap with one hand, fingers working like a spider. She squeezed the bulb atop the dropper and lifted it. They saw it was full of clear liquid. She tapped the parrot's bill.
Ándale, pajarito, she cooed. Abre el pico, mi rey.
The parrot opened its beak, and she delivered four drops into it.
Tequila,
she noted, screwing the cap back on the bottle. The three gathered males watched as if hypnotized. The bird swayed. He wobbled his head. He lay his head over. The bird was wasted. She laid it in her free hand, where it might have snored on its back. She reached again into her infernal pocketbook and produced a sheet of newspaper. Little Angel would for some reason remember that it featured Hialeah scores. And she laid the sheet on the cellar's bench and the drunk parrot upon it. With both hands, she then wrapped the bird tightly, forming a paper cone, tail in the pointy end, green head sticking out of the open wider end, like a parrot's snow cone. Mother America retrieved the cone and, with a self-satisfied flourish, astounded them by pulling open the neckline of her sensible blue dress. She took the somnolent bird and inserted it into her cleavage. Big Angel had never noticed his mother's endowment before. Suddenly, she seemed to be blessed with an expanse of pillowy flesh, and she tucked the parrot into that cleavage, adjusting herself as it sank from view, finishing the operation by using her thumb on its head to get it well positioned in the shadows. She adjusted her bust and said, "Let's go to San Diego, boys." The border in those days was different. No huge wall, no drones, no infrared towers. What awaited the De La Cruz family was a raggedy line of wooden booths, manned by immigration and customs agents, sitting on stools in the heat, bored to despair as they breathed limitless clouds of car exhaust, and more cynical every day as every single driver said, "No, I don't have liquor in my trunk." Big Angel pulled up in his Rambler. "Be calm," he said. Mother beside him with her pocketbook in her lap, Little Angel in back, toying with his baby Bobby matchbook to distract himself from his absolute terror that they were about to go to federal prison for life. Gangster Grandma seemed as serene as a Tibetan monk. All Big Angel could see of the agent was his belly. It was a good belly. It floated outside Big Angel's window. It turned away once as the agent eyed the following vehicle, then swung back.
"Papeles, amigo,"
the voice said.
"Yes, sir,"
Big Angel replied.
"Green card."
He held up his magic ticket to the USA. The agent bent down, and a red face appeared. He glared at America.
"Papeles!"
She held up her passport.
"Pasaporte."
The red face swung back to Little Angel. "How about you, bud?"
"U.S. citizen," he cried.
The agent patted the top of the car and rose, his belly back in the window. Little Angel was afraid the big man would yank out his pistola and blast them all.
"Okay," the belly said. It started to turn away. "Have a nice day."
which is when the parrot awoke. The belly was three-quarters of the way turned when the parrot announced its displeasure.
Quack!
It screamed. The belly froze.
Quack!
The belly turned back to them and stopped. Big Angel stared straight ahead, his jaw muscles furiously rippling in his cheek.
Eek!
The agent's big red face lowered itself to the window and gawked. Mother America turned to him with the blankest expression on her face. "Isn't that strange?" she said. "I wonder what it could be." And then her bus line began to move. The agent's eyes bugged out. Suddenly, with further mutterings and screeches, the parrot wiggled out of her cleavage, its head rotating as it appeared. "How interesting," Mother America said. The angry and hungover parrot burst forth and cursed them, then leapt out the open window and flew away. All of them, government agent, Mexican nationals, and U.S. citizen in the back seat, watched it flutter north across the border. Las Mañanitas. The women came back in and began to wrestle Big Angel into his chair. "Forgive me," he said as they wheeled him away. Little Angel caught up to him. "It doesn't matter, hermano," he said. "It matters." Minnie rolled Big Angel away and parked him in the kitchen. She rushed out to the yard to collect partiers. Big Angel grinned through the pain of crossing his arms behind his head so he could strike a nonchalant pose. "It's funny, carnal. I used to starve, you know. I used to want to eat all the time. And when we got here to this country, I ate all the time. I got fat. That's why Perla started calling me flaco. Funny." Little Angel could see Minnie's shadow on the patio. "Pero sabes qué?" Big Angel said. "Now I'm starving again. I hate to eat. I eat to feed the cancer. The pills make me sick. My stomach hurts all the time. But I dream of food, like I'm 10 again. Really, I never dream about making love, but I dream about carnitas and tortillas." Minnie's shadow moved away. "Well, okay, I dream about sex all the time," he admitted. "These are the great thoughts of Miguel Angel. Pig meat on a tortilla and nalgas. For when you write a book about me, I should." "You should, yes." "Pinche Angel," Little Angel said. "Take me outside," Big Angel said. "I don't want to do it in here." Little Angel maneuvered him to the big door. "I was always tremendous," Big Angel announced. "Let's go." "Tell me," Big Angel continued, ignoring him. "Pato said my father cooked for you, yes? What was his best dish?"
"Chili."
"Chili? Like gringo chili?" Big Angel was appalled. "I called it heart attack chili." "Mas, detalles, por favor." He wanted the details. "He started with a pan and lots of oil," Little Angel said. "He diced and fried red onions, fried them till they turned clear. Then he poured in a bag of rice."
"Rice?"
"He fried the rice and put in tomatoes and garlic, fried that till it was clear too, then poured in water and tomato sauce."
"Spanish rice?"
"Right. That would simmer, and he'd get another pan."
"Ah."
Big Angel was flushed. It was as if he were hearing a pornographic yarn. He chopped more onions, then diced and fried 5 pork chops. Minnie came back in. "Daddy." Big Angel held up a finger pointed at a chair. She sighed and sat down. He nodded for his brother to continue. Once the chops were cooked and the Spanish rice was done, you had to pour water in over and over, let it boil away. He put beans and all those other ingredients in a pot. Refried beans. But wait, that wasn't all. After that, he chopped up a pound of Monterey Jack cheese.
"No," said Big Angel. "No," said Minnie.
"Oh, yes, and peppers." Then he stirred the whole thing for an hour until the cheese had vanished into the cement. You couldn't eat more than a couple of forkfuls, honestly. Except him. He could eat a huge plate. And the next day, he ate it cold. He put it on toast, on tortillas, ate it right from the pot. Big Angel clapped his hands.
Mija, he said to Minnie, that was your grandfather. Un hombre tremendo.
The brothers basked in love for their dad. Recess is over, boys, she said. She gestured, and they rolled.
Forgive me, Big Angel said.
You do the same, Little Angel replied. Into the yard. Hey, Little Angel called. What's in the box you gave me? He gestured back toward the bedroom.
It's what I was going to give you that day, said Big Angel. That Christmas.
Minnie rolled him away.
Go look.
Little Angel wasn't going to open the box. To hell with Miguel Angel. To hell with all of this. He opened the box. Inside, a signed first edition of Raymond Chandler, The Big Sleep. The people in the backyard started to cheer. 8:30 p.m. Little Angel stood at the back of the crowd, clinging to the shadows by the kitchen door. The revelers had diminished in number. Pato was snoring on the couch inside. Some of the ladies had laid their coats over him. His cell phone, unheeded, pinged over and over with texts from Manila. Gauzy scarves of cloud slipped across the moon. Dog barks echoed in the canyons. Little Angel listened to the crickets like a haiku poet, reaching out to them as if they were lovers, whispering hope. Big Angel was tinier than ever, sitting in his chair gazing at these looming people. Lalo was sprawled in the lawn chair beside his pops. His head lolled, and he sometimes lifted his chin and sneered, and then let it drop again. Big Angel stared at his son with the inscrutable grin burning on his face. Lalo opened his eyes and stared at his father. He let out a cry.
Daddy!
He started to weep.
What, mijo? Daddy, I'm so sorry for what I done.
Big Angel reached as far as he could.
What's the matter, mijo? Come here.
Lalo leaned over and put his face against his father's bird chest.
I'm so sorry. You okay? You're okay,
Big Angel murmured.
I've been so bad. You're a good boy, Lalo. You're my good boy.
Big Angel kissed the top of his son's head, and Lalo fell back into his squealing aluminum seat.
Hey, Big Angel said, I like your tattoo.
Really? Little Angel thought. It's over. This is it? Everything ends like this? He didn't want it to be over, not like this. Wasn't there supposed to be some climax? What novel, what opera ended in birthday wishes and early sleep? He knew if the party ended, his brother would be gone. He leaned on the wall and crossed his arms, his eyes stung. The women came out of the kitchen, bearing the cakes, Minnie, Perla, Gloriosa, and Lupita. Four candles blazing, a wax 7 and 0 on each cake. Great uproar. Applause. Children and little dogs jumped around Big Angel's wheelchair as the cakes approached. He folded his hands over his belly. Was his head bobbing? The women put the big cakes on one of the folding tables, and Minnie wheeled her father to the table. He looked around at the partiers with a wry little eyebrow lift, leaned forward in his wheelchair, drew in a great rattling breath, and blew out one of the candles. It took 4 tries, but he got them all out. Then Big Angel fell back breathlessly as they applauded him. Perla fussed over him as if he had just won a 5K foot race. And the spirit moved. Of course it did. Any birthday party had a happy birthday song. Any Mexican birthday party had the Mexican birthday song, Las Mañanitas. There was no obvious signal, but the whole bunch started singing as one. Estas son las mañanitas que cantaba el rey David. A las muchachas bonitas se les cantaba Así. They moved toward him, tidal, as if the moon drew them closer and tighter. A whirl, a protection of bodies. Big Angel vanished from sight in the center of the flood. And they threw their heads back and sang, Despierta, Angel, despierta, mira que ya amaneció, ya los pajaritos cantan, la luna ya se metió. But it was apparently not loud enough for them. They started over, unleashing gusts like Little Angel had never heard. They roared, they shouted, they launched operatic and mariachi voices, and they lost notes in sobs halfway through the lines. Little Angel hung back, standing in the music, watching his brother. He had never really heard the rest of the song, yet everybody there seemed to know it. Qué linda está la mañana, en que vengo a saludarte. Venimos todos con gusto y placer a felicitarte. They went on and on. And when they finished singing, they applauded hard and long and kept clapping as they parted. And Little Angel could see him again. They clapped and whistled until Big Angel lifted his hands like a spent boxer and clutched them over his head and shook them and mouthed, Gracias. He actually had tears in his eyes. The sparkle of them pierced everyone like needles. Little Angel put his hand over his own eyes. Big Angel was staring at his brother. He didn't want Little Angel to know he was feeling sorry for him. He ate some cake. So that's it, Big Angel thought. He had got what he wanted, and now it was over. Everything. Over. He had thought it would be more, hadn't he? Pinche Angel. He chuckled at himself. He had thought he would be healed. He couldn't find his father's or his mother's ghosts in the crowd, so he watched his little brother. He couldn't take his eyes off him. Poor little angel, he thought. He had no idea what life was going to do to him. He wouldn't find it in books. La Mini over there, Lalo slumping around. He wished Lalo would stand up like a soldier like he used to. La Gloriosa was somewhere. He could feel her, even when he couldn't see her. She was sacred and didn't know it. When her wings unfurled, they would be wide and dark, almost black, and she would fly above all the flames when the world ended. And there was his poor Flaca, cleaning the kitchen. He had failed his wife as well. If there were a chance to renegotiate with God, he would lobby for more delights for Perla. Maybe Dave could swing one last novena or tell him what prayer might move God. But no, he shook his head. Too late, baby. Estamos jodidos. He and God already had that talk, by golly. Tonight was the deal he'd made at the end of it all. God damn it. Sorry, God. They never warned you to never make a deal with God. Every man dies with secrets. Big Angel was certain a happy man was a man who died with the worst things safely hidden. A life was a long struggle to come to terms with things and to keep some things from others. This was his deepest secret, and it wasn't even a sin. He just didn't want anybody to know. He couldn't get off the floor. Oh, yeah, he said out loud, you put me on my knees. He was in a time bubble. The party rumbled around him, but he was not there. He was back in his room a few months ago. There had been much carrying on in his house that day. It was, ironically, he thought, a Sunday, just like today. Dave had just left after eating all the food in the kitchen and wheeling him back to bed and tucking him in. Kids and dogs and Lalo and everyone outside yelling. Why, he remembered thinking, is everybody yelling all the time, laughing and shouting? He wanted some water, but nobody could hear him. He felt around and couldn't find his cell phone on the bed. Hey, he called, his voice muffled and reedy. Minnie! He smacked the mattress. It was time for his pills. He scrabbled around on his bedside table, popped open one bottle, and gulped his pill with a mouthful of flat, warm Coke. It made him want to throw up. But where was the other bottle? It was definitely time for two pills. He looked around. Oh, great. The bottle was up on top of the dresser, a few feet from his bed. What asshole put it there? He'd scold somebody for that. Hey! He reached for it, but he knew damn well he couldn't reach that far. Help me, pues! Nothing. He cursed and fussed and knew, he knew perfectly well, that somebody would wander down the hall when they remembered him. Somebody would bring him water. Somebody would fetch his pills for him. But he wanted what he wanted when he wanted it. He gritted his teeth, put one skinny, blotched leg down, and winced when the cold floor sent a long needle of pain up his calf, right from the ball of his foot to his knee. Ching! He muttered. He braced himself with his left arm and reached with his right, and his free foot hovered in the air above the floor. He knew that was a tactical error. The geometry was way off. And as soon as his braced arm started to jackhammer from the strain of holding him up, and just as he reached across that immense gap between mattress and plywood dresser with his other hand, and just as the pain of the cold went ahead and shot up into his balls, he fell. He landed on his knees, hard. His head banged into the edge of the dresser. The parchment skin at his temple tore, and cool blood made its instant presence felt all over his face. It was greasy. He wasn't worried about the wound. He was worried that he'd shattered his knees, and he whimpered and cried. He thought cancer had hurt. But this was more vivid, and he could not get up. So the pain screamed louder and louder in his crushed joints as he ground them into the hard floor. Then the blood dribbled to the floor between his hands. He cried and yelled,
Help! Oye! Me caí de la cama! Help me!
Now, Angel, he told himself, we're stuck. Think. He reached up, grabbed a fistful of the sheet, and tried to pull himself up. He dropped back to the floor, where he knelt with his ass in the air and his hands on either side of his bowed head. Who was he kidding? He had no muscles left in his arms. He was truly trapped, jammed between the bed and the dresser, unable even to move his knees under him to try to leverage himself up. He pulled the collar of his t-shirt up to his temple and tried to stop the bleeding. His blood looked almost blue to him. God, he said, this hurts. God said nothing. I need some help, he offered. God might have been taking another call. He looked around for ghosts, but he had been abandoned to his fate. For a moment, he was afraid Gente Bent might come through the wall, grinning. The pain made him tremble all over. All right, he said. He laid his head on the floor. He'd wait. Someone would come. He was Big Angel. He was not going to die like this. But what if he did? What if nobody came until bedtime? He would be gone for sure. His body couldn't take this. His heart already felt like it had been hit by a hammer. God, are you there? And it hit him then. You were on your knees, pendejo. Confess. God had put him there, and there would be no getting up until he had done what he needed to do. I am dirty, he began. I am so dirty. It took him 3 hours. Lalo was on his way to the back room to play Grand Theft Auto when he found Big Angel. Lalo had a little buzz on, nothing too rad. Couple beers, couple shots. He stared at his old man down there like he was praying to Mecca or something. Yo, Pops, he said, why you sleeping on the floor, G? He picked up his father, laid him on the bed, and covered him up. He didn't notice the crust of blood on Big Angel's face. He wandered back out of the room, grabbed the video game controller, and started capping fools and crashing